Hi, and welcome to Tapped Podcast. I'm Joseph Fusco, and I'm sitting here with my co-hosts, Julia and Donna Frio, and Gretel Tron. On today's episode, we are going to discuss free speech in art and how it reflects in politics of the times.
So happy summer, and welcome. We're very excited to be here today. I think in New York City, one of the hallmarks of summertime has come to be Shakespeare in the Park. And that is something we're going to have Joseph kick off for us because he has a very close personal relationship with Shakespeare in the Park. But I know Gretel and I, in our time here in New York, have really enjoyed going to these free performances at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that both Julie and I can agree to is one of the great things about living in New York City is the access and availability to amazing art, and particularly live theater. It's just something that is not of any other high quality as it is in New York City. And it's incredible to experience, especially in the beauty that is Central Park, rain or shine, and we have witnessed it rain and shine.
Absolutely. And no umbrellas allowed, so that's always fascinating with the ponchos and etc.
And one of the great things is the ability to not only watch live theater, but to associate with a great audience and people who enjoy the same thing and catch up and experience life and talk about really relevant and recent issues. And Shakespeare in the Park this summer does not shy away from that, and that's what's amazing. And one thing I love catching up with Julia is like what's recent, what's coming up. And one of the things we were discussing were podcasts at the most recent production of Shakespeare in the Park, and it was one of those things that we never really thought about doing, and then we kind of laughed about it.
We always joked that our conversations were being tapped because whatever we were talking about, we'd see in the news like literally the next day. And yeah, so we were just talking about the popularity of podcasts and then
what happens if we were to potentially do one, or what is it like? And the fact that we discovered many people had started podcasts. And it was nothing that we had ever really tried. I hadn't tried. You had tried professionally. But again, for ourselves and for topics that we wanted to talk about with people that we wanted to talk about and with, as you said, topics that we felt like we would see in the news the next day anyway.
And then happened Julius Caesar. That was the first production this summer of Shakespeare in the Park. And we'd like Joseph to come in now because, there's a lot to say about the mission of Shakespeare in the Park and Joe Papp and what unfolded this year. So if you would just sort of fill folks in who aren't here in New York City about what the mission was set back in the 1970s.
So full disclosure, I work at Free Shakespeare in the Park every summer. I have for the past 5 summers. I work in various capacities at the Delacorte Theater and for the Public Theater. And just as a point, these views that I'm expressing and that are expressed here are of our own and in no way represent the views of the Public Theater, Shakespeare in the Park, or the Delacorte. Shakespeare in the Park is a cultural icon and institution of New York City. It has been performing in the same spot for 50 years now, and it was formed by Joe Papp, the late great theater impresario who founded the Public Theater and the New York Shakespeare Festival. Word has it that he was doing a touring bus and truck production of Midsummer Night's Dream back in the 60s, and he was driving around Central Park performing it off the back of the truck, and the truck broke down in the spot where there was sort of a clearing and a man-made lake, and he said, "This is where we're going to put our theater." And he campaigned Robert Moses, the infamous power broker of the time, who was the sort of city planner, and got the land for the Delacorte at a whopping price of $1 from the city. And since then, the mission has been, since day one, that Shakespeare belongs to all, and therefore it should be free and accessible to people of all ages and economic strata. This has carried on for 50 years over the various administrations of the public theater, starting with Joe Papp, moving into George C. Wolfe, and now with Oscar Eustace. This summer, Oscar Eustace, who is the artistic director of the public theater, came back to actually direct one of the performances that was put on, and that was Julius Caesar, a decision he apparently made the night of the 2016 presidential election. And it was staged in modern dress, which is not uncommon for Shakespeare. But this time there was a not thinly veiled allusion to Caesar as Donald Trump. The Caesar character wore a suit with a red tie that was too long, and the actor wore a sort of reddish blonde poofy wig. That was it was clear where the politics were coming from. Now, if you've read Julius Caesar, you will know, spoiler alert if you haven't read it, that Julius Caesar is assassinated by members of the Roman Senate, which is where the famous line, "Et tu, Brute," and comes from, because Brutus is the last person to stab him, thus delivering the final blow. There is a misconception that this occurs at the end of the play. It does not. It occurs in the middle of the play. The rest of the play unfolds with the conspirators who killed Caesar getting their own comeuppance. So it actually is a morality play against attacking the head of state.
And I think this is a good place to step in William Shakespeare, one of the greatest playwrights of all time. Wrote this tragedy, Julius Caesar, in 1599. It is not just a play. Julius Caesar was a real person. And this takes place in ancient Rome in 44 BC, when Rome was the center of an empire that stretched from Britain to North Africa and from Persia to Spain. So this isn't just a dramatization. Julius Caesar and Brutus and Mark Antony, these are all real people. And when Shakespeare wrote this tragedy, one of his first, around the time he also wrote Romeo and Juliet, those were his first tragedies, it was at a time where Caesar was, he was using Caesar to comment on the politics of the age. Queen Elizabeth I had sat on the throne for over 40 years. She refused to name an heir. She didn't have any children, much like Caesar. And there was great concern over who would take over once she passed or perhaps was overthrown. And so he was really using, I believe, and scholars have studied this, using Julius Caesar as a way to comment on the politics of the time. So I think it's important for people to understand that it has always been a play critiquing the politics of the age. And as we all know, history tends to often repeat itself, and we often see patterns in history. So there have been many productions of Julius Caesar in the last 400 years. But this one sparked a lot of discussion, which I believe great art should do. And that's why we're talking about it today. And perhaps many of you heard of Shakespeare in the Park for the first time because of this production of Julius Caesar.
And per your point of being able to talk about what's happening going on, the last, as far as we know, the last three presidents, U.S. presidents, have been featured as Julius Caesars in productions around the country. So this was also not necessarily new, but I think we are in a new age of information traveling really quickly and really fast with very short headlines of which to make assumptions with. And so I also want to put it out there that it was very quickly spread throughout Twitter, Facebook, and the news media that in this production, you will see President Trump as Julius Caesar murdered live on stage. But to your point, I was one of the few who was not aware that it happened really quickly once you got into the show. And it was not the climax. There was much more to it. So I was one of those who were turned around in viewing this production.
And a lot of people are, and that is the crux of where I believe much of the ensuing controversy stemmed from. Meaning, there was somebody in the audience with a cell phone who filmed the assassination sequence, which is very violent, very bloody, filled with very realistic-looking movie-type special effects, which were brilliantly executed by the incredible costume department who worked on the show. And that video made its way to Fox News and to InfoWars and to Breitbart. And this occurred on the heels of the Kathy Griffin controversy of her cut holding the bloodied head of Donald Trump, and around the time when there was a shooting of congressional leadership at the baseball diamond in Virginia. Because there is not many people have actually seen the show, our production or any production, there is an easy assumption that the show ends with Donald Trump or slash Caesar being executed. That was then spun into right-wing propaganda of furthering a mission that we are calling for the assassination of Donald Trump, which is not the case. And so there were protesters who disturbed the show. The first two, I'm not going to name their names, but they are right-wing bloggers who make their living stirring up right-wing controversies. The show, as designed, had plants in the audience of people who jumped up in the middle of the show to protest the piece, which the actual protesters did not know that there were people in the audience who were actors who were jumping up and protesting. So there was a misunderstanding that perhaps the show was already being protested every night, when no, it was actually part of the show.
Lots of extras filling the seats, which was surprising to us when we when Gretel and I saw the production. I have to admit, to Oscar's credit, it really did make me feel like I was in the middle of a Trump rally, for better or worse. But yeah, I think for anyone who didn't know better, that was an interesting take.
Yeah, and I think that, but I also think to the credit of, as you said, the effects and the costume department, one thing that was very clear is how canny of a resemblance to Trump, Melania, as well as the administration that it was. I know one thing too that came up was that, you know, you really felt like you were part of something. There was also pussy hats. There were many other resemblances to modern day politics. And the audience felt so connected to that.
And yet not a word was changed. They only added, I believe, one word. I think he added Fifth Avenue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, the language was pure Shakespeare, which I found so interesting that we could relate to a piece that had been written over 400 years ago. It was quite fascinating.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the beauty of Shakespeare. That's the beauty of this particular show. You know, we can look back to 1937, Orson Welles' production was about fascist Italy, and Caesar was portrayed as Mussolini. So what has really changed in the 80 years since Orson Welles put on his production and Oscar Eustace put on his Donald Trump production? What I think has changed is the speed with which information can be misinterpreted and spread about to people who already have a particular political point of view and are looking for validation of their own points of view. And I believe that happened when, in the last week of the run, there were three performances that had brief, and I stress, brief interruptions from people who jumped up and spread the same message, which hasn't really been addressed, the message of, and I quote, to the effect of that Goebbels would be very proud and you're all working for Goebbels and you're Nazis. That was said more than once by the protesters. By the end of the run, there was an extra added security and police presence at the theater. There was concern that more than just verbal disturbance could occur because of apparent credible threats that were made to the theater itself and to the actors. Fortunately, there were no serious incidents that occurred, but what the two things that were most scary. Number one, it is frightening when somebody jumps up on stage and a show gets interrupted and you just don't know what a person is going to do. You don't know if they're just doing it to get on InfoWars and Breitbart or if they actually are packing something. So that is very disturbing. But the larger concern, I believe, within the theatrical community is that the public theater, thankfully, is a very solvent institution, and it can afford extra security. It is run by a very tough guy, and he has a very tough staff, and we're not going anywhere. The concern is for the smaller Shakespearean companies, the smaller theatrical companies, who can't afford 20 security guards at their venue, who can't afford those backing from major cultural institutions throughout the city or political institutions. And so the problem is then, do smaller regional theater companies who are so important to the country, are they going to think twice about doing political art? Because is the act of expressing yourself worth putting your artists and your audiences in potential peril?
And by peril, there's two types of perils. There's both physical peril, yeah, and then there's also financial peril.
Right, because yes, there were two or three sponsors who pulled out of this production at the park, but the public and the Delta, you know, they're going to be fine. You know, I believe it was Delta and Bank of America who pulled out of this production. You know, but the public can afford that. Smaller places can't necessarily afford that. But my hope is, often with what a lot of is happening lately, that instead of a backlash, there becomes an outpouring. Mm-hmm. And so if there's one thing I could say or folks to come away with is support your local theaters, support these productions, because without free speech on all sides, what are we fighting for?
Right. And unfortunately, because the right has this vitriolic, intense, violent outrage, they started threatening companies that weren't even in New York, that just had the word Shakespeare in the name. They were threatening another theater company that performs in Central Park but doesn't have a home like Shakespeare in the Park does. They literally perform on a rock, and they were threatened for their non-Shakespeare production. And that is a very, very deep concern.
And also, after Julius Caesar closed, 2 days later, Joseph and I went to see a performance of 1984 here in New York. And allegedly that evening, there had been a threat, much like that that had been against Julius Caesar. And there was extra security. There were two uniformed New York police officers out front just in case, because it was a known person who had made the alleged threat. So I think in a larger scheme of things, we have to really be vigilant about what is happening here. We need some public discourse that isn't violent. We need to be able to express ourselves without being afraid. And I know for you, working closing night was unlike anything you had ever done before at the Delacorte.
So what was it like behind the scenes?
It was tense. The night before had gone off without a hitch. Saturday night, there were no incidents. Friday night, there was an arrest. Thursday, there was nothing. Wednesday, there was an arrest. There was a collective hope that Sunday could go off clean, and that was it. The first disturbance happened before the show actually got started.
On Sunday.
There was a pre-show prologue sequence prior to the actual play beginning, and that was the first thing that happened. And when you hear screaming that you're not supposed to hear, that's not part of the natural rhythm of the show, it's very disorienting and it's frightening because you don't know if somebody's carrying something. We made very, very concerted efforts in our security about checking bags, but you just don't know. When that happened, that sets people at sort of off kilter. And then during the assassination scene, two more people jumped up on stage and they were tackled by security and pulled off. And as they're being pulled off, by the way, the audience is cheering. I mean, the audience was on the side of the production and the performers and the workers. They were not there. They were not tolerant or sympathetic to the people who are jumping up and disturbing the show. But you just don't know. And not only is it disturbing and unsettling because you're just heightened. There's a heightened sense of anxiety. It's also deeply, deeply disappointing that here we are. We are putting on art. We're also working. This is also our place of business, and we're also responsible for 2,000 people who fit in the theater. And it's just disappointing that somebody is going to get up and try to dismantle the show, which they were not successful at doing. Also that they can prove their point, which they had no interest in trying to prove when Barack Obama was president. And nobody said boo about images of Obama with a noose around his neck. But you have Donald Trump, a facsimile of Donald Trump being stabbed, and all of a sudden this is the most un-American thing ever. So it's just...
But as you said, though, that's in thanks to the speed of media right now and the way that people are feeling politically.
Absolutely.
But what do you think that Shakespeare wants audiences to take away from this?
You know, the beauty of Shakespeare, and it's been said before, but it's true, is that it's 500 years old, and it's still being played, and it's still being played for a reason. And it's not just because the poetry and the language is so gorgeous. It's because almost always, because there are exceptions, reflects who we are at every given time. This play has been performed since 1600. It's 417 years later, and it's still relevant because we don't change as a species, and he just managed to hold up a mirror to us that it always makes sense. It made sense in the 1860s when John Wilkes Booth and Junius Booth and Edwin Booth performed in Julius Caesar, ironically enough, in New York City at the Winter Garden. It was relevant in 1600. It's relevant today. And so I think anybody who is a social commentator wants to know that, like, yeah, what's relevant in 2017 is going to be relevant in 2417. And so it's the continued relevance that is, I think, what is at the heart of most of Shakespeare's work.
Well, I love that we are sitting here in 2017 talking about William Shakespeare, which most of us, you know, we read a couple of plays in high school, but then you move on. So it's great to bring it into our discourse. And for anyone coming to New York this summer, in mid-July, begins the second production of Shakespeare in the Park, and it's going to be A Midsummer Night's Dream. So I hope folks start lining up. Again, tickets are free. They have always been free. And you got to wait in line, but it's well worth it. I know the three of us fully support these productions and hope you will come and enjoy them too, because we're very lucky to have them.
So thank you very much for joining us today on Tapped Podcast. Thank you, Gretel. Thank you, Julianne, for your insight. And we look forward to joining with you in our next episode.
And please be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook.